Hey everyone, welcome to our Davenant Shorts. This is our little sneak peek with each of the faculty, the professors, some of the staff at Davenant Hall talking about their upcoming Trinity term, which begins April 8th and goes through June 15th. So we're talking to each one of them, about 12 professors, 12 courses overall. And listen to the end of this episode to find out what the coupon code is that we've been given for about 10% off first-time students who want to enroll in a Davenant course. And we've got Dr. Matthew Hoskin on today to talk about his course, Early Christian Worship, Ritual, and Space in the Ancient Church. And we got Matthew Hoskin right in front of me. So how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. Yeah, thanks. Glad to be on, Peter. Good to meet you.
This will be fun. So tell the listeners a little bit about Matthew Hoskin, and then how you became a Davenant Hall lecturer.
Sure. Well, I live in the wilds of northwestern Ontario in Canada on the shores of Lake Superior. So that sort of probably has shaped me in ways I can't even imagine. And I myself, in terms of my background as a professor, I have a PhD from the University of Edinburgh in patristics, in the history of the church. I focused on manuscripts and 5th century Latin things, and it was all really, really exciting. And while I was there working on my PhD, I met Brad Littlejohn, who would go on to found the Davenant Institute. And so at one point while I was working through my career, I was sort of wanting to move out of doing pure like Latin and classics and that sort of stuff, and wanted to start leaning back into my church history teaching. And so I reached out to Davenant because I saw that been following what Brad was up to and saw that they'd started actually teaching stuff. And he said, oh, we're only sort of focusing on classical Protestantism. But then COVID hit and it was like, you know, the Lord can bless you in all sorts of ways. And basically Davenant Hall said, we have room for patristics now. And so I've been part ever since, been teaching as much as I possibly can. The students are great. We get a good crop of students. They're all very clever. If you're not clever, you can still take our courses, though. Put that out there.
Yeah, that's good. And I think so. I asked Dr. Roberts about this 2 hours ago in human time and 2 days ago in podcasting time. And I had talked to Dr. Michael Lynch 3 hours ago in human time and a week ago in podcasting publishing time. Because you guys are recently announced some PhD partnership, and just curious what some of your research interests are. And if you got really like really into it, nerdy people who have their master's degree and they're looking at Davenant Hall, it's like, oh my gosh, they've got a partnership, a legit PhD program. I could be supervised by classical theistic Protestants, confessionally reformed people. So what are some of your research interests if people are interested in being supervised?
All right. So my research interests are late antique Christianity, but that, of course, is enormously broad. Narrow that down further. My most niche aspect is I do the letters of Pope Leo the Great, who was Bishop of Rome 440 to 461. One of the earliest bishops of Rome, you might even be willing to call Pope. That's part of the fun.
Yep.
And so I focus on him, his letters, and the transmission of those letters. But that ends up meaning that I could supervise people who work on Christology, because he's a major figure in the development of two-nature Christology in the Latin church and wider church as well, and therefore the Council of Chalcedon that he helped organize and run, all sorts of other Latin things, the Greek fathers as well, sort of if we're thinking 5th century through 6th century, especially up to the reign of, say, Justinian, 565. I could probably go as far as St. Patrick as well if we're thinking 5th century stuff. Looking at super early British Isles stuff. It's definitely on my radar too.
Awesome. Well, there you go. If somebody's interested, even beyond the master's program, you can reach out to him and talk about this. So let's talk about Davenant Hall too. So you were relatively early, at least COVID early, and you've known about it before then. What makes Davenant Hall unique amidst the landscape of higher theological training?
I would say that what you get at Davenant Hall is what one of my PhD supervisors, when I told her I was, starting to work on this at this place with Brad, and she was intellectually serious Protestantism, which is not to slight any other
No, not at all.
theological school, but that's what we offer you. And we offer it, though, unlike schools that will remain nameless, grounded in the actual classical Protestant tradition, grounded in the best fruits of, scholastic theology as well, rooted in the true orthodoxy that we, as heirs of the Reformation, can claim, that we're not going to beat around the bush about things like justification by faith or whatever reformed doctrine you hold, but we will also hold you to the exact same standards as one of the big Ivy League seminaries, except that here it's exciting to be a follower of Jesus. So that for me is one of the biggest things. And I find the community that we have online is full of extraordinarily sharp minds. We get into really intense theological discussions sometimes. Like the Lutherans and the Reformed and the Anglicans and the knives are out, but it's because we love each other and it's amazing. And I think it only gets better and more honed because of how seriously we take what we do.
Yeah, that's good. So I've already talked about the course itself. So this is within the history department, the Christian history department, early Christian worship, ritual, and space in the ancient church. And so you're teaching this course. So many might be wondering, what on earth is ritual and space in the early ancient church? So if you can describe what this course is for those who are wondering.
This course is an opportunity to investigate not just the texts that we have or the descriptions of a church service. Say Justin Martyr has a description of a church service that you would experience in Rome in the year 150, or we have the Divine Liturgy of St. John Chrysostom sort of at the other end of the patristic era, right? This is saying one of the important things that we need to realize is these all happened in places. And so if we want to really get deep into what those texts represent, we also have to look at art and archaeology. So it's still going to be a very text heavy because I'm a textual historian, but I realized that we have to ask ourselves these questions of, well, where are early Christians meeting? How does this shift and change over time? So, for example, I visited an archaeological site on the island of Cyprus where there's this house with this huge meeting room in it with Christian mosaics in the floor. And I'm like, was this a pre-Constantine church? Could be. I don't know. I have to do the full research on that. So I'm not naming the archaeological site in case I'm wrong. I don't want to look like a fool. But then you go to other places before the reign of Constantine, they're already building purpose-built churches. And then you get these early basilicas in Rome and Jerusalem, and this is where Christians are worshiping. And so our worship isn't just sort of the words that we say, right? So I'm an Anglican, so I grew up thinking liturgy means the words on the page. But I'm realizing it's more than that, right? Like whether, and that's whether you're an Anglican or a Baptist or go to the Alliance Church or whatever, right? Like when I visit, we have this Alliance Church here with a wonderful pastoral team, and I've visited there sometimes. And the experience in that space, which is more like an auditorium, is, for good or ill, a different sort of worship moment for me than when I'm at my local Anglican parish with shiny brass candles and stained glass. These are different experiences. And so what does it mean for an ancient Christian to worship God? And I mean, you need to bring space and action, not just words on a page.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that's not necessarily a different way, but I wonder if people you kind of rip the liturgy out of the context without seeing where this comes from, why they did what they did, where they did it. That's interesting. So what will students, you said you're a textual historian, but also some archaeological stuff. So to tease some of your students or prospective students' interest, they're always asking, what am I going to read? Why am I reading this? So what are some of the sources that you guys are going to read? What are you guys going to be engaging with in this course?
So you're going to be engaging with some early, these sorts of handbooks, I guess we could call them. The earliest of which is, I think, called the Didache, which might be from the year 90, right? So you're going to work with that. The most famous one, though, is probably the Apostolic Tradition, which some scholars say is by Hippolytus of Rome from the 3rd century. Because that's one of that text has some of our actual earliest written down liturgical prayers in it, some of which, if you've been to an Anglican, Lutheran, Roman Catholic, or Eastern Orthodox liturgy, you will have heard or said yourself. So we're actually going to be looking at those texts. And then, like I mentioned earlier, the Divine Liturgy of John Chrysostom, and we're going to get to look at that and figure out which bits are actually his and which bits are Byzantine expansions
Sure.
on the original. But also going to be looking at this really cool building. There's this city in Syria called Dura Europos that no one ever visits because it's in a bad place.
Okay.
It just all it's one of those parts, even in the ancient world it was, which is why it's so cool. It got abandoned by the Romans because they kept on having frontier wars with Persia there. And so that means it's frozen in time in the 3rd century, and it has both a synagogue and a church with these frescoes painted. All the walls are painted in Bible stories. And so we can look at this, and what does it look like to be a Christian in the 200s in this place in Syria, worshiping here? And what does it mean? And how does that different from your Jewish neighbor who's going to the synagogue? How is that happening? How are church and synagogue as buildings operating differently? And then I mentioned earlier, I'm a big fan of the basilicas, the ancient basilicas of the city of Rome, because they're still there, except for the ones that the Renaissance did a number on, but a lot of them are still there. And so we're going to get to see some of these. And what does it mean? Ask yourself questions like, what does it mean that we've got these big basilicas? Are they, when you start getting funding, you build this and you don't build a thing that looks like a temple? Right, temples with pillars on the outside and space to worship on the outside. A basilica, a big, huge hall to gather on the inside, which is a different kind of thing. So.
There you go. So last question we're asking all the lecturers and professors at Davenant. I mean, of course, as a professor, you want to help engage your students in the knowledge acquisition process to help them with this and understand more of our tradition, our history. But I'm also assuming there's a part of it that you want to shape them in some way, not just input or deposit some information in their heads. How are you hoping this course shapes them even beyond the knowledge they're going to acquire of early Christian worship?
My hope is that this course could help make reverence great again.
Like it.
That's basically it. Whether you'd, I'm not expecting if you go to one of, a big non-denom church, you're going to walk out of my course and decide to like become an Anglican or something like that. That's not what I'm imagining is the ideal outcome, but that you would go to that church with a renewed sense of the glory of God for what you do on a Sunday morning, that it's not the way we often, perhaps in North American culture, go to church almost for a show, right? But that without changing churches, this could help you. And if you are in leadership at a church, this could help you in terms of what you do liturgically, because we're all actually liturgical,
Oh,
technically,
absolutely.
what the word is, right? What you do liturgically and how you lead worship and what are the things that you say. And even if I hope that even an Anglican could, besides finding the roots of our liturgy there and how deep the Book of Common Prayer goes, that it could also help you when you're leading your own congregation in a traditional worship, help them find this reverence and see us engaged through time with the great cloud of witnesses, like from Hebrews, and that the body of Christ isn't just the people who are gathered with me here, or the people in my city, or the people alive today, but that we are worshiping often in ways and patterns that were being done by people in the city of Rome in the year 150. And that's actually a beautiful thing to be able to meditate on. So.
Absolutely. So this interests you, and I hope it does, because it interests me, as all these courses do. These are, I mean, honestly, really interesting courses. So all the first-time listeners, first-time students for Davenant Hall, we were given a coupon code. So it's gonna be GGG Trinity 24. And if you use that coupon code, you get $25 off your first course or as a first-time student, whether you're an auditor or if you're a full-time student or you want to take the full course and get some sort of credit for it. So GGG Trinity 24, and you guys get $25 off. So I hope people use that, get a little bit off the top and get to appreciate that theological shaping that Davenant Hall provides. So thank you, Dr. Hoskin, for coming on, talking about your course, and for the work that you guys do at Davenant Hall.
Thank you.